What's up, guys, and welcome back to another episode here on the Architect Network. Today, we're going to be continuing with our theme of AI with none other than Ootoro Tadeshi. Now, if you haven't heard of Ootoro before, I'd be surprised if you haven't, but he is somewhat of a pioneer of the computational and parametric era. He's probably most famously known for his best-selling book, AAD, which I even bought as I was learning Grasshopper, and many of the workflows stick in my mind. Ootoro was very much a pioneer of their computational design era or parametric design era. But fast forward today, and he's also one of the pioneering figures in this new AI era. And there's lots of really interesting parallels we see with these two worlds. And we're going to be touching on that with Ootoro about the relationship between the AI era and the computation era. There's a lot of parallels between them, how he got into AI from this world of computational design, and how these two worlds really complement each other. We'll also be touching on, of course, the era we're in, what do we think of all the stuff that's going on, and how do we see it affect us in the future as architects. As always, though, if you like this episode, please just simply give us a like and a subscribe, share us with your friends and colleagues. And as always, you can stay up to date with what we're doing in terms of podcasts, courses, and online events by following us on Instagram, here on YouTube, or on LinkedIn. But without any further ado, let's jump into it and have a chat with Ootoro. All right. That's it. We're live, Ootoro. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks to you for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be with you and with your audience, of course.
Yeah, I know. It's been I've been wanting to get you on for a while, and I think it's as always perfect timing with everything that's going on in this crazy world of AI and everything that's going on. So it's a great time, and this I think will be close to almost our 50th podcast. It could be the 50th. I haven't worked out the timings yet, but it's definitely a milestone to have you on, so I'm glad to have you. Maybe for the audience that are new to you, which I would be surprised at with our audience, I'll give a little bit of a breakdown of my like bullet point introduction. But Ootoro, you're a computational designer and AI expert now, and we'll talk about that new expertise very soon. You're, of course, the author of AAD, Algorithms Aided Design in Parametric Architecture with Grasshopper, which I bought a few years ago, and it was one of those books that actually really got me started. And it's weird. There's a few particular workflows. My brain is just linked to that book. I don't know why. It's always the divide with ISO curves. That workflow just is in my mind. I picture the book. So there's definitely workflows. I even use that today, which is so it's still in there. Of course, you're the founder of your own studio, AT Studio, or Studio Ootoro Tadeshi. And looking at your background, it seems like you had this really interesting start. You've obviously worked in practice for a bit for Zaha and some other practices, but you've been working as a consultant for like a range of different stuff, like architecture, automotive, fashion. You know, you've really covered a whole bunch of stuff, and you're also teaching a lot, right? I think you were one of the pioneers of teaching online, and obviously you're very well known for the book, but of course also teaching online. How does the studio work now? Tell us about like where are you at now with this relationship of, you know, it's like an architecture studio, a computational design studio, and you're also teaching. How does this relationship work now, and what are the kinds of things you're working on?
First of all, thank you for the great introduction. It's difficult to give this answer because everything is in a real ongoing evolution. I always like to say that I'm really a strange animal. I don't know how to define myself because you know, I'm an architect, but over the years, my studies, but also my attitude, my passion I always like to say that I have a great passion for objects, for everything that you can think about, something that you can imagine, you can design, you can touch also at the end of the process. So it's difficult to answer because, again, it's still in evolution. In this very precise moment, if I have to give you a snapshot, I'm working on layout optimization for building, for a watch design. I recently completed a music stage for an American artist. I'm doing some research and writing. I'm not teaching actually in this very moment. So that's the only thing I'm doing. So everything is in evolution. The main driver and direction for me is trying to find an idea of beauty. I know it sounds really romantic, probably too Italian, but for me, I started with this image perspective, if you like, to produce or to create, to follow, to look for beauty. You know, the tagline of my office is like seeking beauty through technology. And this is the second ingredient. Because I never create or adhere to a specific manifesto. To me, I try to find beauty, whatever it is. I have my own idea, of course, through technology. And technology changes. And it changed over the years. I started using, you know, pencil and papers. I started studying architecture in 97 and 98, more or less. And I started with pencil, papers, compass, you know, everything was completely analog. And then over the years, the CAD was introduced and then 3D modeling software and BIM. Algorithmic design was serendipity to me. It was a kind of, you know, it completely changed my life. And then I started, I switched from being a traditional architect into something completely different. Now we say, we use the definition computational designer. But trust me, in 2007, it was I was just an architect with some superpower that algorithms they gave me. But there was not a specific definition for that. And everything is changing again. Now AI, as you already mentioned, is like a new, how do not to say, change of paradigm, is a new platform, is a new method and way to reimagine everything. So I don't have answer about that. I'm just an explorer. So I'm trying to explore all the possible tools and I'm studying again. I'm studying and writing something about neural networks because I really want to understand deeply what we are using nowadays, from Midjourney to Stable Diffusion. And so I started again, as I did 10, 15 years ago, more or less with Grasshopper, because I didn't have a very, you know, a solid background in geometry or mathematics at that time. And so I started studying again. And I'm doing the same with all the principles and the theory that is behind AI. So I will say I'm seeking beauty and I'm still in, you know, trying to do it with the current technologies. And I'm really, I don't know how to say, I like to explore everything that for me sounds like a new potential and something that also can change the way I do things.
Yeah. Free from a particular type of design and also the tools and technology that you use. I think that I've been watching a couple podcasts of you to, like, you know, hear about what you've been doing. I think there's something you just touched on, and there's a few points that have really touched on some of my own observations. I think one of them is that term superpower. I don't know. I use that as well a lot. In, you know, I'm always telling young architects, you can develop this little superpower that is Grasshopper or rendering or something like that. Which, especially when you're young, it really helps for you to stand out. Because you can't buy experience, but you can actually get good at one of these little superpowers. So I definitely love the superpower analogy. And the other one is, you were just touching on it, but I heard it in your other podcast with Dimitar, where you're talking about Architect 1.0, where you're drawing, you know, hand drawing. Architect 2.0, where I called it the computer-aided era, but you know, it could be computational design, parametric design, all these things where we were really aided by the computational power of the computer. Mm-hmm. And we had these new tools, Grasshopper or parametric architecture, whatever you want to call it, and could create all these new things. And now I feel like we're transitioning into this Arctic 3.0, this AI era, where
AIO we can call it.
AI. I've been trying to make AI Architect work, but it just it doesn't really work as a as a term. But I think there's something really interesting in that, and I also think what's interesting about your profile is I felt like you were the guy that surfed that first wave of parametric architecture and computational design, and you're also very much surfing the wave of this AI era. So I think there's something really interesting that we should kind of explore a bit further. But yeah, maybe let's talk about how and when you got into that, from the Arctics 2.0 to this 3.0. Like, when did this AI stuff come up on the horizon, and what made it interest you? Because there is a lot of parallels between computational design and AI. Right. You also hear some computational guys saying like it's completely opposite. So yeah, when did you come across AI, and what kind of piqued your interest really?
Well, it was actually in 2019, more or less. I was always interested, but I was, before that moment, I was just a reader or just an observer, but I was not hands-on, you know, in this kind of new topic. But I remember that I started using StyleGAN, captured by some app, some apps that was released at that time. That, do you remember that app that was able to age your face or making you younger, something like that? I started with that thing, and also a website that was called This Person Does Not Exist. So you go, you went online, you just click the space bar, and a new face was out. And so I say, wow, that's fantastic. And I started understanding how was the process behind. And then I started using a tool that now is really, you know, really famous, Runway ML. At that time was a very niche platform. And so I said something like, okay, I can try, instead of using faces, I can do the same thing using maybe images of shoes or objects in order to create something, let's say, from scratch. And I started doing things with the footwear, but my very StyleGAN output, and no one noticed that, but it's still on my Instagram, was a Christmas doodle. Was a Christmas tree that was created from scratch using a StyleGAN. Really, I don't know how to say, very, very naive and pixel, nothing sexy, I would like to say, but still interesting. And then I worked with a watch company years ago, 2020, more or less, an Italian one, and they asked me to create a watch with the style of 70s. And then I started thinking about how we create things. And then also, you know, creativity can be mainly combinational. You know, sometimes you think you take different things and you combine them together in order to create something new. Maybe you combine two traditional concepts, but when you blend them together, you come up with something completely new. In that case, I started studying the style of 70s and watches, you know, buying books and then reading and trying to understand the style. And then I said, oh my God, but I can do the same thing again with a StyleGAN. I can download a hundred of pictures of different watches from that age. And then in this kind of blender, I can, you know, develop and maybe output something interesting. And it was exactly like that, with so many errors and strange features. But I kind of, you know, sometimes ugliness can be a driver for getting something new. And I started with images, and then I created a three-dimensional object. And that was my very, you know, the very beginning of, let's say, AI exploration. But there is something very important that we have to mention now, that for me, let's use AI as an umbrella definition, or like something really, because, you know, today we are like kids playing with a lot of new toys, but we are all kids. But something really relevant to me, the real revolution, something that I call the silent revolution about AI tools, is like for the first time we are stopping using the mouse and we are switching into, there is a transition into something completely new. There is a new interface, a new way to create a dialogue with the, with an intelligent machine. And this will change everything. You know, I guess that behind AI, there is a huge ambition that probably no one is able, or no one wants to clearly say that, is that we want to translate our thought into something real. Because every time, if I say, think about a chair that looks like a piece of glass, you know, in your brain, something is like happening, you know? And so I guess there is a kind of really ambition to translate our thoughts, our imaging into something real. And this is the first step. The first step is like stopping using the mouse, stopping. There is something that I wrote in an interview for the zine. There is like, for the first time, we are stopping being monkeys. But yeah. I'm not against our ancestors, of course. But for the first time, we will use a new way to create things using just our, you know, brain, our words. There is a very famous sentence by Ludwig Wittgenstein that says, the limits of our language are the limits of our world. So trying to find a new vocabulary will be probably game-changing in defining new shapes. And if you are using Midjourney, you know it very well, because every day we are trying to find a new vocabulary, new descriptions, and also a new syntax, how to combine words and parameters and adjective in order to create something that it's like closer to what is in our mind mainly.
Yeah, I think that's it's a great point, and it's one we touched on with Corbis in the podcast, where we're talking about like technology is being democratized a little bit more now. You know, you don't necessarily need to learn how to code. Like right now, even the way that I work in big in the office is like, people need to go to me to do this kind of script or whatever it is, whether they need a little bit of help or, you know, a lot of help. And so, you know, they have to go for me, and you have to have the skill set, be able to do all these things, right? Whereas now you could totally see a future where you just type in what you want and it will create, it will do the same thing as what Grasshopper does to you. And I can already see me as like an old dude that was like, yeah, but you need to learn to code with Grasshopper. It's like a bit like how you hear your tutors back in the day that were like, you need to draw by hand still, you know, to feel what it, you know, like I can already see that coming for myself. With Grasshopper. And I think that's a good thing, right? Is like the more we can access these tools and easier it is. And we've seen this with Midjourney as well, right?
Yeah.
And I think your vocabulary point is also super interesting, because again, to think about how I've been using it is, you know, I've been happy in my world of 3D modeling and using computation, and like my mind just works like that. But I'm, you know, I'm dyslexic, so I struggle more with words. And so I got into architecture to get away from writing, right? And now I need to write and describe what I want in an image. So it is like learning a slightly new skill, but, you know, that bar is so much lower now. And what you touched on about the idea iteration. I mean, man, we can just iterate through ideas at a crazy pace, which again is exciting. But equally, what do you think about? I guess we're touching on basically like image generation, diffusion models, and diffusion models. What do you think about this era? Because on one hand, yes, it is great for producing ideas. And I can see in the product world and some of these other worlds, that can be like the image is everything. But for example, for architecture, one thing I'm trying to kind of test and see if I can get around is it's just producing an image and it's somewhat thoughtless, right? It's like in Arctic, you go through this huge process to get to your image, your render. The project is portrayed in this final render. But there's this crazy process and all these decisions and all this kind of stuff that gets you to it. But now it's almost getting suggested that here's the final product, the image, and then you work backwards. And I see on one hand, the more style-based architects are kind of flooding over to the Midjourney side, because it's if you're all about style, it's kind of good for that because you can create style. But the more process-driven architects, and for example, it's been interesting to see some of the designers adopt it and not within the office, is like, okay, this is really great, but now let me put that aside and let's get down to the real designing. Where do you feel like we are in that era? Is it just a case of learning to work with this kind of new collaborator colleague that we have and learning to gain better control over it? Or, you know, is it something that we're going to really see come down the line when we get more, you know, architecture trained, even 3D modeling like kind of stuff before we really see it disrupt the design process a bit more?
Well, the first thing that I guess it's important to point out is that we are really in a kind of incubational phase of AI applied to architecture. And that's why I said before, we are like kids with new toys.
Yeah.
There is also a kind of misconception that I can see online or during discussions with colleagues and friends, is that we are judging AI processes from the output. And so, as you said, from images, but actually it's way more interested in how to leverage AI in a personal workflow. Let me give you an example. I was working for this music stage for an American musician, and they hired me, let's say, for my aesthetic, my parametric aesthetic, and et cetera. And, you know, every time I create something new, The tendency is like opening Grasshopper, running Grasshopper, running Rhino. I have my scripts. I have my way to translate ideas into scripts. It's like a musician, you know. I cannot see notes or strings, but I can see, you know, algorithms.
Yeah.
But for that specific project, and also after the first briefs with the production, I had to follow somehow the album artwork that was very well defined. And so at the first time I felt kind of loose, you know, because it was not my style. So I leveraged at that time all the Midjourney Stable Diffusion things in order to find a language. And that was a completely new way for me. So instead of switching from, you know, problem solving in general, you have a problem to solve. And in my case, I always use algorithms in order to solve these kind of problems. But for the first time, there was a kind of filter. So problem, finding a new design. And then the filter was fueling my brain with a new vocabulary again, with a kind of new imagery. And Midjourney again, but also, for example, ChatGPT was really interesting because I found new words by describing the style of the album, the style of the music. And so, for example, ChatGPT came up with a great definition that was techno-primitivism. That is something that I didn't find online, and it was a way to define the style for that specific project. And once I got this kind of definition, everything was clear for me. And then I started creating, again, a vocabulary of shapes and doing several iterations in order to get images of details, you know, a bottom-up and top-down process. Details, but in the same time also the global image. And finally, I got, you know, a kind of ontology of influences and stimuli to, you know, start my algorithmic phase. And that was completely new. So AI was, you know, the images, that I got from Midjourney, they were, or Stable Diffusion, they were just a part of a process. They were not the final output for me.
Yeah.
So I guess that we are also considering AI again as a new brick on a kind of, you know, system or workflow or pipeline, and not just the output. Because just judging AI just from the output that we can see online, it's really limited in this specific moment. And then you were mentioning also this transition to also the possibility to get immediately 3D models, for example, which is something that is going to happen probably in a few months. And again, it will create a new way to get a direct transition from our ideas into something real. But, you know, the side effects is that you need to develop a new system of words and syntax in order to correctly describe something. Another example, in order to be as clear as possible, if you want to create a simple shoe, if you don't know the components that made contemporary footwear, so you don't know what is an outsole or a shoe upper or laces, if you don't have the right vocabulary, it won't be impossible to create something that looks consistent and meaningful, you know? So there are so many ingredients on the table at the moment. But again, I guess that we need to... The side effects is that we need more design culture or architectural culture in order to be effective with these new kind of tools.
Yeah, I think the way you describe it is like it's another component in the design process, another brick within the wall of the project getting built. It is how I see it being used right now. And I think, you know, at the beginning, people were like, oh, this thing's going to take over and you just generate this thing. But it's been interesting. It's like it's disruptive. It's completely going to change what we do for sure. And we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. But at the same time, I haven't seen it disrupt the design process significantly, which has also been interesting. Whether that's down to like the designers not adopting it as much as they should, or, you know, particularly different styles of how you approach a design between different practices. But that's definitely something I've been kind of like looking into more and seeing how it's actually going to take effect. And I mean, one of the other things I wanted to touch on with you is like, I feel there's a lot of parallels between what's going on now and the era when Grasshopper came about, and then this parametric era. It was suddenly, there's a lot of parallels in like, one, this fear or misconception, or that the computer's taking over. And now, you know, I still have to battle with people that's just because we use Grasshopper, your building isn't going to turn into this crazy geometry, you know, parametric style looking thing. So this fear or misunderstanding that the computer's going to take over, that we've lost control of the design process through algorithms, it seems like all of these things are playing out again. It's just a click of a button and you get like this magical building. What parallels do you see with this era and what's going on with the parametric era, and any kind of big differences between the parametric era and the AI era we're in now?
Well, I will start from the main difference. The main difference is like algorithms, they were influencing the left side of our brain, you know, the analytical part.
Yeah.
The main thing that are making somehow AI scary is that it is influencing the right part, the creative part, because we always say, okay, the computer is an automator, is a machine that can speed up process, but actually cannot be really creative. Now we are scared, and somehow we are also probably overestimating AI, because it's like creativity is under attack. That's the main difference. Yeah. This is something that I can clearly see. And that was completely unexpected. I like to say that that was the AI plot twist, because we were expecting, you know, we were expecting AI fueling the left side. For example, you know, there are so many optimization tools that they leverage machine learning tools for, you know, creating optimal buildings layout or circulation. For example, in Grasshopper, we have the amazing Lunchbox ML developed by Nathan Miller with so many neural networks and tools for example, clustering vectors or areas. It's incredible. But we were expecting everything in that side of things. So nothing connected with creativity. And also the transition between, you know, the traditional 3D modeling into algorithmic modeling was still on that side of the brain. So we just realized at that time that we could really program the machine. In general, if you wanted to create a super complex building, it was a kind of manual ability. I clearly remember around 2005, there were the virtuos of Maya or 3D modeling, or sorry, 3D Studio Max, people that they had this amazing manual ability to create, you know, complex shapes using subdivisional surfaces and mixed with meshes and nerves. And it was a talent and hours and hours of, you know, trial and errors and experience. And then I remember that Grasshopper was, I felt guilty at the beginning when I was able to create maybe a complex facade or intricate details by just connecting three or four like Grasshopper components all together. I clearly remember when I was showing to an office, one of the most simple things that is the box morph tools in tooling Grasshopper. So you can reiterate a detail into a facade or you can do complex panelization. And I remember people, they were, you know, they were kind of, it was unbelievable for them, you know? Yeah. You were just playing with three small boxes and connecting them with spaghettis. And then you were able to create amazing shapes. And I felt guilty for that. And people were skeptical, you know, about this, you know, they were losing control again because it was not anymore a manual process, but it was about being able to create a script, to create a code, even if just visual in terms of, you know, if we stay in the Grasshopper realm. Now it's way more than that because, you know, when you create something in your, when you are imagining something, you are creating a bridge between the left side and right side of your brain. And this is exactly, metaphorically, of course, how diffusion models work. I mean, it's not strictly an analogy of of our neural networks, but actually a tool like Midjourney is like, it's really able to blend different concepts and coming up with something new. So it's really, it's challenging the idea of creativity that we have. And this is something new, something unexpected for not only for architects, but for human beings in general. You can clearly see the revolution connected with ChatGPT and people, maybe journalists or people that they write on a daily basis new contents, and they are leveraging or just copying from ChatGPT. This is something that was actually not expected. There is a story that I always tell. When I was a kid, I remember I had a Commodore 64, a very old computer. I don't know if you ever used it. And I remember one day the teacher sent me an essay that was something like, you know, a rainy day in winter. And I came back home and I didn't want to write the essay. I run my computer and I type something like a rainy day in winter, and the computer output syntax error. Now we can actually go online or we go on ChatGPT and we get thousands of different, you know, answers and essays. And then we can also calibrate how many words we want, which kind of style we want for a specific essay. And you know, the very interesting part is that it's not about the hardware anymore. The computers are not smarter or more powerful. We just switch from a kind of mechanical intelligence that we had before, and the transition is now into a something that we can call collective intelligence. We put all the computer, you know, all together, and we, of course, we can leverage an enormous database of information. And there is something very important to be said, that all the data that we are using nowadays were created by the living generation. From 2005 up to today, everything was created in, you know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And so thanks to this kind of fuel, we can actually generate new words, we can generate new design, blending all these things together. And this is something that we did not experience before. So in the same time, there is an analogy, but there is a profound difference that lays in the, let's call it again, but with, you know, it's a metaphor. It's a kind of attack to human creativity that we did not experience before.
Yeah, I feel like there's some parallels in that, you know, Grasshopper unlocks this ability to create complex forms, complex geometry, let's call it parametric style, right? Which was a little bit of the design side, and there was like a little bit of an attack on the design side.
Yeah.
But it was protected by this gateway of learning all of this stuff in order to do it, right? Or you have to go through this specialist or whatever. But yeah, now it kind of comes back to your other point, where that's been completely wiped out and it's democratized in that anyone can just type in this stuff. So I do wonder whether, like, initially we saw Grasshopper, it allowed us as architects to create all this freeform geometry and rationalize it, and also helped us build it. And what I see with the AI image stuff, some of the stuff that's like most popular online, is it's typically like the crazier, it's very organic forms. It's almost like we're trying to get closer and closer to the organic forms. And I am getting contacted a lot where there's people who have created something in Midjourney or whatever, and they want to build it. And the only way you could build it is through computation. So
yeah,
there's also this interesting mix of, you know, maybe we'll still need a lot of like computational firepower to realize these things, because we now have to rationalize this image, this really cool idea that we have. So do you see like your traditional computational processes of Rhino and Grasshopper and all this kind of stuff staying around, or like even becoming more more like adopted in the mainstream architecture world, or less so now that people can go to ChatGPT or something in a few months or even year time where it's like the Grasshopper equivalent? Do you think computation has a big role to play in this kind of AI era?
October 2023, yes, we still need computational design.
Yeah.
Of course, because
November,
you know,
2023, it could be,
yeah. So it's better to stay really I mean, it's very important to understand that everything is like changing on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. Yes, of course, everything now it's about parametric style using, you know, Midjourney, which is probably the most popular tool out there. And mainly because it's the most simple to be used. I'm basically using Stable Diffusion that gives you more control using sliders and parameters. But, you know, in general, young designers, but not only young designers, they are really appreciating this kind of instant gratification that comes from Midjourney. And we have to say also another thing, that probably parameters, and I'm saying parameters like Zaha Hadid or BIG or I don't know, Kulas or Frank Gehry, they are becoming again parameters in this system. So you can create a super organic shape just because you can just add the name of our parametric architects, and then you will get images. But they are nothing, as they are just, you know, pixels that look like a parametric architecture. But we don't have to be naive, because I started working with trying to generating different images connected with, let's say, freeform chairs or objects, small scale objects. And I realized one day that they were structurally consistent, and not because there is an FEM software inside Midjourney, but just because Midjourney is like copying, let me use the word copying, chairs that maybe, you know, lattice structures or something like that, that they are already existing and work, you know? So we are getting images of things that they have a kind of structural consistency, and also they look like something that works in terms of structural behavior. In a few months, probably, we will get the same thing, but in terms of three-dimensional geometries. So in order to answer your question, is like, yeah, probably computational design will be still used, but in a very small niche of super expert, in order to solve specific and very, I don't know to say high level problems in terms of complexity. But if you will, you know, if you want to create just a chair, using a lattice structure, for example, we will probably have something that will work structurally, because the AI will create 3D models upon models that work, you know? And so we won't need any kind of, you know, structural analysis on optimization or rationalization of the project, because it will be already in the pixels, or in that case, in the voxels generated by the tool.
Yeah, so it's intelligence is really coming from replicating thousands, of chairs, and it's learned that you need four legs or like, you know.
Yes. And I used like the word copying, of course, in a kind of wrong way, but it's more about combining things. If you combine things that work in reality, you will get probably with something that works again, that works again. So that's the main thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's quite an interesting look on it. Is like, yeah, if it's learned from all these things that do work, mm-hmm. then there is sort of an intelligence behind the image, in that it's like you learning from all these images yourself.
Sorry to interrupt. It's also important to say that, you know, one of the main criticism is that we are going to replicate things already existing. But that's just this very stage of AI tools. But if you think that, for example, 5-10 years ago, they were training AI to play chess. And the learning phase was involved actually humans, you know. Now AI can learn or can improve the chess ability by playing against itself. And so that's getting new skills, and it will happen in the same way in architecture. So we don't have to be like naive in terms of and saying that we were just creating Zaha Hadid or Frank Gehry like buildings. But for sure, AI will come up with something new by learning in a different ways the things that we created as humans so far.
Yeah, and we also touched on this with Wan Yu in one of our podcasts, which will come up to come out whilst we're talking, but where she was talking about, you know, we will evolve to this 3D generation, which, as you say, should be a few months away, but that 3D will be very primitive in terms of what we need as, let's say, architects. It will be like a point cloud or a meshy thing, and for like a chair or something, it could be plausible. You're still gonna have to probably do some work to 3D print it or something like that. But to get to something that we could use architecturally, we need a whole new type of 3D where the objects know what it is. So it's a BIM model. It knows it's a wall. It knows it's a window, a roof, and all these kind of things. But it also needs to know the relationship it has with these other elements. And once we get to that, like you say, AI could then start designing it, buildings, test them for whatever you want to test it, and then improve it. And that's when we're really going to see the disruption, I think, in the AEC space. I feel like that's still a fair amount of time away to do that. Like, to, you know, we will see 3D, but kind of this new era of BIM AI 3D, I think, is going to take some time, because the training data is all messy. There's crappy BIM models, there's Rhino models, there's SketchUp models, and, you know, it's all over the place. But I think that's really going to be that next stage, isn't it, of truly seeing. And that's where it gets, like, exciting, but also scary.
Yeah, because we don't have to forget that with diffusion models, the most popular technology now, AI technology in architecture, they are just pixels. We are like photographers. We are not 3D modelers. Kind of geometric representation that we are going to use is the voxel that I mentioned before, which is the three-dimensional extension of pixels, you know? And voxels, they can also embed information and data. And that will be very interesting, as you said. They can also learn the syntax, how voxels, these kind of little cubes, how they are connected together. And so you will get some adjacent logic and parameters, and that will be really interesting. If A is next to B, something happens. If A is next to D, something else happens. And so that will be very important. And probably voxels will be the new paradigm, the new geometric paradigm in the next future. And what will happen to NURBS, maybe? That's another interesting question. I don't know, but if this kind of new paradigm will become most, you know, the most popular one, I guess that we will get rid of all these curves and surfacing and trimming, cutting, copying will be completely different.
Yeah, the new era of 3D modeling and BIM and all this kind of stuff is going to be very different to how we work now.
Because all the tools that we have nowadays, they come from, if you think about this, from the Bezier curve invented in the 60s in the automotive field. Because at that time, it was super critical and complex to describe freeform shapes in a kind of a neutral way, and also something that can be shared within different teams. But we are still using that paradigm, which is, you know, creating complexity, starting from curves and connecting them together with surfacing. And for sure, the AI, the next age of AI will make us like curatorial. We will have a curatorial design role rather than, you know, creating role. Will be more about putting a problem, getting different solutions, and then we will be selectors, more or less.
Yeah, yeah. My hope is it's kind of like what I think the future will be like AI collaborative, like this era where it crosses the line between simply a tool and it's a collaborator. And, you know, we're able to envision new things and a new era of architecture with this human and artificial intelligence together, rather than, you know, this, the machine is taking over and designing for us, and we're just kind of pointing it in different directions. I think that's the most interesting outcome. What would you say to young architects listening to this? And like, I feel like the next generation of architecture offices and stuff like that, to me, we're going to see a similar thing to the parametric era, where the offices that adopt this, it will probably be younger individuals and, you know, studios like your own that adopt these, that will emerge as these kind of new leading design studios. But what would you suggest as a young architect? Would you still suggest to learn Grasshopper, or, you know, jump into the world of AI and test that, or both?
That's probably the most important question, and I would like to say that it's important not to be stick to software, but I would like to recommend to have a kind of algorithmic thinking, which is different from just, you know, being able or to use Grasshopper or similar software. It's important to decompose architectural design problem into a kind of algorithmic way. And then there will be Grasshopper or another tool or maybe an AI solution, but it's a kind of approach to the design world. And it's not that common because, you know, universities in general, they still, you know, offer this kind of learning path that is still traditional. And it's still about, you know, putting together so many different things in a kind of, you know, auditing way. We need to think in a kind of systemic way. And algorithms are always the answer. So, and this is, to me, it's the main answer. The second one is like, Grasshopper was born in 2007 and did not change that much in 15 years.
Well, yeah. Grasshopper 2 is out soon.
There is no big change. If you analyze the change in terms of quality and also in terms of functioning of Midjourney Stable Diffusion in 1 year, you will be shocked. Everyone will be shocked. If you compare an image generated from Midjourney in June 22 and October 23. So the second skill is being able to acquire new skills every day. And this is something completely new. It means being open and also fast somehow, because it's, and you know, internet offers us the possibility to being exposed to novel things, theories, tools. That will be important, but also very, you know, the risk of the so-called FOMO, it's around the corner.
There's a lot of FOMO this year, isn't there? I think it's a nice way to transition to like one of the last few points I wanted to touch on, which was, you know, obviously you were one of the early pioneers of teaching online, and it feels like this new era is going to be taught online. It's, you know, you got universities already kind of banning a lot of this stuff, and you know, you struggle to even learn Grasshopper, like the algorithmic side, in uni right now. So it does feel like the future is online. The future of architecture education is online. Obviously, you are a pioneer in that. I'm trying to create it here with ATN as well, and we see that a lot with other people. We got Mariana, who you know, she is kind of part of same generation where she was teaching online. Now she's got a studio. You got like Tim Fu, who's also been teaching, and now he's got his own studio. But you are a pioneer of this. And where do you see this going for yourself? Like, will you be, you know, the teaching side with your studio side? Do you see those two worlds blending, where you even get people coming into the studio and learning? Like, what do you see on the horizon for yourself in terms of teaching this new AI stuff?
You know, when I started, for me, it was the opposite. If I compare, you know, my story with the one of Mariana or Tim, for example, because I started with the book, actually. When I always like to say that when I was more or less 27, 28 years old, I was like Bruce Wayne. I always use this metaphor, like Bruce Wayne at Batman. You know, Bruce Wayne in the morning with suits, and I was working at offices. At night, I started doing my research, and in parallel, I I've wrote and published the first books, parametric. The first book was actually in Italian called Architettura Parametrica, so Parametric Architecture with Grasshopper, and then AAD and so on. So for me, teaching through a book, actually, so sharing my knowledge was part of learning new stuff. It was a kind of... we will say back propagation nowadays, or if you like, it was a positive loop. I was learning and then sharing the contents. And to me, even if internet was completely different, because YouTube was not like it is today, a book, something that you could really touch and have in your and had in your hand, for me was very important, and it is still important today. And so I want to share. I want to answer your question with the idea of a book in mind, because you can really access to so many different concepts and topics and knowledge in terms of computational design or 3D modeling nowadays. But it's very important to have a spine, to have something that connects all these things together. I have a lot of, I meet so many people also in the office that they are good in doing very specific things. But it's very important to create a theoretical framework to give the right place to all this knowledge. Otherwise, you are not able to actually face the market, to face the real problems coming from the architectural world. So it's always a balance between online and offline. And I know it sounds probably boomer or old style, so you can do it using, you know, books, or like doing real workshops in presence. But it's really a merge, a balance between so many. If you have a specific problems nowadays in Grasshopper, you go on YouTube, you just type something and you will get an answer for that very, very specific problem. But if you don't have a right, I call it framework, you can call it spine, but it's very important to have a structure that holds all these things together. And it is different. Mine is different from yours because you have different ambitions or different, you know, ideas. Everyone should create its own, you know, framework to connect all these things together. I have to say that I am in this very moment, I decided to stop my, let's say, teaching activity, but just because I need it and I need to fuel my brain with new things. And I will probably come back in a few years with all the AI, but as I said before, neural networks and machine learning, things that I'm currently studying. I really stopped all the Grasshopper teaching because I've done for 12 years more or less, and after a while you ended up with you feel a kind of cap, you know, you cannot say anything else anymore. And so it's very also important to give new space, you know, to give space to the next generation. That's very important also. And I'm like recharging the batteries now, in metaphorically, and I will come back soon with new things.
You're going into Batman mode.
In Batman mode again, yeah.
AI Batman mode. That sounds scary, actually. Okay. No, that's. I think the book is a super interesting perspective because, like, if someone said to me, "Hey, Ollie, make a book about Grasshopper now," or like AI stuff, I'd be like, you know, pointless. By the time it comes out, it will all be like, it will all have changed. But I mean, you know, the book that you published, I think, is the Grasshopper book. And there is something about, you know, you can go on an online course and interact with you and all this kind of stuff. But there is something different about having a book and that physicality of having those things. I'm also starting to lean towards teaching in person or online as well, or that mix, right? Because I think that that kind of interaction with the students is super important. And I'm definitely also relating with this era of maybe taking a break, and like, I got a lot of stuff to catch up on, which actually brings me to our last question, which we usually ask a lot of people, is there something in the tech world, it could be AI or something outside of AI, that is really exciting you as well, that is maybe being a little bit overlooked with this whole image diffusion FOMO that's going on? What excites you now?
This is something, I probably already gave this answer, is this new way to interact with the computer. I'm not thrilled or excited by the results, I have to say, at this very moment. I mean, I like to surf the Instagram with new images. It's, you know, it's part of this new game, and I'm really enjoying it. Also because it's really interesting to see how other people, they use the same software. Because we are using the software or platform, if you like. So that's really interesting. But to me, the real... the most exciting thing that is going to happen is this new UI, this new way to interact with an intelligent machine. And that will be more and more interesting in the next future. So I'm interested and I wait for this new real revolution that is just around the corner.
Yeah, there's too much to keep track of. But I think, that's definitely going to be an interesting one. How do we interact with this new intelligence, and how does that filter into what we do in our industries?
Yeah, it's an exciting moment anyway.
Yeah. Well, Ottoro, that's we're almost at the hour point, which is usually where we kind of wrap things up. And I think that's a perfect way to kind of end it. It's I'm excited for you to go into your Batman mode, and I'm sure we'll see something super exciting come with it. But for now, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And if you have anything that is coming up that you want to promote, feel free to drop it there. But it sounds like you're going into this Batman mode, right?
I mean, yeah, silent mode. So thank you so much for having me. A great pleasure in talking to you.
All right, great. And thank you guys for tuning in. We'll definitely be back in next month with... I think I'm going to stay on this theme of AI. We really are on this like thought process of AI. And so we've had Ottoro, and I've got a couple more AI guests lined up. So we'll speak to you guys soon. Thank you for joining. And thank you again, Ottoro.
And thanks to you.
See you on the next one.